Okay, Lamar, I have a super important question for you.
Oh boy.
And don't worry, I'm going to help you do this because I know it's a hard one. But which of the dragons in the Burt Dragons rider group would you ride? Like, that's my dragon. And I
Which
have,
dragon?
don't worry, I will show you. Stand by as he evaluates his options.
So
Don't
it's like
worry,
which
guys.
breed of dragon of the different types that we meet?
You can pick their, so they have names. They all have names. And I know it's hard to remember them all. That's why I have them listed out here for you. So I'm going to help you pick which is the dragon you identify with, you know? And there's more. So you just tell me when you want me
Yeah,
to keep
keep
going.
scrolling, keep scrolling. This will be
Okay.
really invigorating for the people who are just listening to the
Yeah,
audio.
this is not a visual
So there are a
medium, we
bunch
know,
of
but
dragons on
he has to
screen.
look at all the dragons. These are
Ooh,
pictures of dragons, is what
wow.
he's getting shown.
Skull Crusher looks like a badass. I don't even remember seeing that one in the movie, but that one's pretty cool. Maybe I just like the name.
You do see it, but it is brief. It is brief.
Okay. Or maybe some of these are from the I think some of these are from the sequels.
These last three are from the sequel,
Okay.
but the rest are in it.
Okay. And I'm guessing Toothless is off the table, right? That's not allowed.
I mean, it can be on the table. I just didn't, I know you know that one, so it's not on here.
Did we give a name to the giant dragon that's like the evil one? The
That's like the Red Death Dragon.
Now that one then obviously he's like the strongest one.
Oh, okay.
I
That's
like a little
bold
bit of
because
danger in my dragon
I was going to
riding
say
escapades.
that's bold because he dies. You remember that part, right? Where
Well,
the
I don't
guy.
want to sit on him after he's dead, obviously. In this scenario, he would still be alive. It wouldn't be much fun if I'm just riding the corpse.
It's so funny you say that though, because as you were going through, you reacted to Skull Crusher, and that is the one I thought you were going to pick.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious, right?
Actually,
You can read me like a book. Yeah.
I was like, I got it. That's my one.
What about you?
Okay.
Which one are you going with?
Okay. I know this feels like a cop out, but it is Toothless because I'm obsessed with Toothless. It's black. If y'all don't know this about me, black is my favorite color. I love like black sleek lines, all the things. But also, I love Stitch. And fun fact, his face is based off of Stitch.
Yes.
So he's freaking adorable. And I wanted to show you my Stitch and Toothless mug that I have as evidence of my obsession with both. So
That is adorable.
I'm just saying. So yes, I would have to go Toothless. Like he's a sky puppy.
Yeah, I think
He's
the
just a sky
face, it was
puppy.
like Stitch, and then they also used some behavior patterns of dogs, cats, and all very cute
Yes.
animals for the way that Toothless behaves.
Which is why we love them. Exactly. Okay. Thanks for playing.
Absolutely. I hope I win a consolation prize.
You too. Welcome back to We Drink and We Watch Things. I'm Mackenzie.
I'm Lamar.
And this month we are celebrating anime, MAY, not to be confused with anime,
Yeah,
ME.
because we will
We
get shit
realized
from people who are like, none of
we will
these are
get.
anime films.
I
Anime
know.
is an animation.
Which we debated. We'll just asterisk that really quick. We did debate that, but we do feel like a lot of anime films, as in Japanese animation, feel very different than the kind of films we're going to talk about this month. They're like almost in a category of their own, especially Studio Ghibli. So we will be peppering those in later on and throughout. And don't worry, we're going to talk about them. But these are more like American animation type of films, is what we're going to do this month. And another asterisk, Omar, I forgot about that. I was like, I feel like we need to explain as well, is that we would normally in the month of May probably do like a May the 4th, like a Star Wars
We
thing.
had thrown that idea out. Yeah, makes sense.
But as you all know, my dear co-host here is pretty anti-freaking Star
I
Wars, and
am
I didn't
not
want us
anti.
to
I don't dislike the Star Wars films. I'm just not in love with them. I've watched, I think, almost all of them once, except for, I think, Solo I didn't see, and whatever the newest episode 9, I didn't bother because the one before that was so bad. So I get it. I'm not in love with Star Wars.
See, guys, this is why we couldn't do it, because then all the May the 4th people and Star Wars fans would just be mad at us. So
Yeah.
we're just
But
not gonna
that's
do
on them.
that.
That's their problem. Like you're gonna get mad because someone has a different opinion than you? Why are you listening to podcasts? Start one, damn it.
Maybe I get a co-host. Maybe I search around for a temporary a visiting co-host who will do Star Wars with me. Please submit your applications now. I need somebody to talk about Star Wars with me who's not going to just hate on it. Anyway, we do have some great animated films picked this month, so don't you fret. But we're going to kick off with a really fun one, I think. I'm super excited, which is How to Train Your Dragon.
Yay!
Oh, it's a good one. So we'll dig into it here in a second. But we obviously had some fun with the cocktails this time. There were so many good choices and names and all the things. And so, Lamar, tell the people what we're drinking.
Well, I personally did my own thing. This might be, with my limited experience in making cocktails, this might be the best tasting one I've had, which obviously means that it's very sweet and sugary, which is my style. But essentially, I made some fresh hot chocolate with some almond milk, like just straight up hot chocolate. And I put not just some Frangelico in there, I also threw in some Chambord, black raspberry, and it's bomb. It is incredible.
What is this concoction called?
This concoction is called Mostly Toothless, in honor of our dragon. And Mackenzie's would be dragon.
That is hilarious, and also a really bold combo of things, man.
I was scared I was going to waste hot chocolate, which would break my heart. So when I took the first sip, I was incredibly relieved.
That is hilarious. Okay, so that's Lamar's cocktail today, which is in fact great. But I also did something a little bit different today. And I started with a name and worked backwards, basically. So as you are wont to do sometimes with cocktails, if you didn't already know this, homies. But mine is a dragon's breath, which is a mix of a lot of things. We've got limoncello, Aperol, citron vodka, little Di Serrano, Peychaud's bitters, and some like lemon, lime and simple syrup. So it's a lot of things.
And you said you're not sure the proportions, right? This was just chaos theory?
This was chaos. This was chaos down here. Yeah, we were just flailing liquids around and making a mess in the kitchen, and actually put it in the freezer because I batched this earlier. I was practicing earlier. And so it's actually a little frozen right now, which I think is kind of a fascinating thing for a dragon's breath cocktail, but it's really good. So cheers. And it's red. Y'all can't see it, I know, but it is red, so it is kind of appropriate as well. But anyways, let's talk How to Train Your Dragon. Let's go through some basics and get into the fun. If you haven't seen this yet, I'm kind of shooketh, because this was 2010, I think, right? 2010.
Yeah.
So it's been around for a hot minute. That it annoyingly 14 years ago was 2010. Do we want to talk about that?
How painful that is? 14 years ago, I was 62, so I'm 76 now.
Yeah, I think I was only 87. But anyway, so yeah, it's been a hot minute. It was well reviewed, well loved in its time, very highly rated.
We have like an 8.
Yeah, made a ton of money, 8.1 out of 10 on IMDb, 99% from critics on Rotten Tomatoes, and 91% for the audience. Like, I was trying to think back, actually, when I was taking notes this time. I think that may be the highest rated thing we've done. What do you think? Especially Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, those are very high Rotten Tomatoes ratings.
It's tough on Rotten Tomatoes to get both the critics and the audience. But you might be right. This might be the most equally popular, unanimously popular, I guess, out of the bunch. Might be.
Yeah, that was crazy to me. So, I mean, and I love this movie, so it kind of checked out. But I was like, wow, that is very highly rated. Animation is probably a little bit better reviewed, maybe, to begin with, because it's more fun. But yeah, anyway, good times. Some of the basics, we've got our director duo here. Dean DeBlois, I think. DeBlois. And Chris Sanders, who are both known. They've co-directed a couple of things, and the other one being Lilo and Stitch.
Coincidence that you love, yeah, both of those.
Yeah, I love both of those. Oh, Lilo and Stitch will get you every time as well. We'll have to do that another time.
And both those gentlemen worked for Disney prior to jumping to DreamWorks. So they obviously did Lilo and Stitch. Then I think in like 2007, 2008, they jumped over to DreamWorks and worked on lots of stuff there. But I think those are the two big ones that they partially wrote and directed together.
And I think they did Kung Fu Panda.
The IMDb, I went down a rabbit hole, and it was a little confusing on what they, like, I think they also help out in the art department.
I don't think they directed
The designs and things like that. And I think they have heavy hands in all the DreamWorks content at this point, but they're not always on the writing and directing side.
Yeah, I think that's what it was too. Like, I think they were one away to work on Kung Fu Panda, but they were, yeah, in their early days over there. But yeah, and like speaking of, you know, having their hand in it in the story, similar thing here. We have a combo of writers, both of them. Mm-hmm. So they do the writing on this as well, but they also are joined by William Davies, who did like Flushed Away, which I never saw. I don't know if you saw that. Puss in Boots, which I did see and is very cute. And then a bunch of the Johnny English stuff.
Yeah, again, my rabbit hole took me there. And I was like, so basically any movie that Rowan Atkinson, aka Mr. Bean, did is directed by this guy. Like, he's in 5 or 6 of his films.
All of them. And then they did, in addition, from a writing perspective, in addition, have done things like all the Stitches, really, like all the Lilo and Stitches, all the Dragon movies, obviously, but then also the Mulan story, which is cool, which, again, story, not like, they're not saying right. They wrote the whole dialogue, but they did the story. And then also Chris Sanders did The Croods, which I never saw but heard was very good. Did you ever see that?
I didn't see it, but what I found weird about that was that he went on to do The Croods, and both these guys that get the director credit here haven't directed a lot, but it was interesting mm-hmm. to me that he went on to do The Croods, and meanwhile, Dean stayed on and did all the other How to Train Your Dragon content. I thought that was weird that the two of them co-directed this and Lilo and Stitch, mm-hmm. arguably just both great films, and then didn't really work together again after that. I don't know. Maybe some drama.
He was like, listen, we have creative differences. I need to go tell the story of early humans. You keep talking about dragons.
I'm going to go backwards. You keep going forwards in time. Yeah,
exactly. Into this fantasy world, dragons. Okay. but yeah, we have a big cast and crew here. I love that about animated movies. It feels like they can always get more like bang for their buck when it comes to cast, because it's voice work versus, you know, physically appearing there. And so they have a kind of a rock star cast as a result.
But can I disagree with one thing you said? Because I was actually shocked at how not large this cast is, because it's taking place on this island full of people. Obviously, the mm-hmm. dragons are just going to be sound effects and things like that. Not necessarily mm-hmm. there's no dialogue there. But you said it has a big cast. I think it has an incredibly impressive cast, but there's only 13 credited
actors.
That's
more what I mean. Like, yeah. The powerhouse of the cast is more what I mean. Like, animated films seem to get a lot of big names in mm-hmm. one place is kind of what I meant. Like,
13 people and 8 of them are huge stars, which is just bonkers.
Right. That's what's crazy to me. I mean, like, you have, so we'll just run down the list, right? We've got Jay Baruchel, which, as we know, we just talked about on Goon, how all the stuff that he's in, so we don't need to dig into that.
A little
but he's
more
done,
family
you know,
friendly in this one than Goon.
A little more family friendly in this one for sure. But he also did, you know, This Is the End and a couple other things. But we also have Gerard Butler, who obviously uber famous, but probably most famous for 300. Mm-hmm. That was kind of his breakout role, right? And then he did Phantom of the Opera to much the chagrin of every Broadway fan ever. I actually really love that version of the movie, but he's, you know, his singing could use some work.
Also, I just put this together, but he's also in Reign of Fire, which is another dragon movie. Live action, CGI. Oh. But yeah, maybe he just loves working with dragons.
He's like, you know what? If it doesn't have a dragon in it,
that,
I don't want
to
do it.
Or I have to be like a cop on the edge. Or like, right. He has like 2 types of characters he's good with.
A cop on the edge or a spy that's being chased because he's supposedly a traitor. You know, like, we have some basic plot lines mm-hmm. for Gerard Butler's acting career. He does a great job, but yeah, he's a little typecast, that's for sure. But he's a fun character in this. He gets to play this giant Viking dad, and his dad's character is supposedly 7'2", which you're kind of like, that makes sense. I mean, he looks huge, even in an animation. He looks huge.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's him. And then there, of course, there's Craig Ferguson, legendary comedian, obviously the host of his late show, but he's been in a ton of movies, a ton of TV and all kinds of stuff. What do you know him for?
I mean,
like,
I
from
knew him from
comedy?
His late show, but I looking through his history, I didn't realize how much he got his start in animation. Basically, if you're mm-hmm. an 80s or 90s kid and you were watching Nickelodeon in the 90s, you probably saw something he did, because between, I think, he had roles in Angry Beavers, he had roles in The Wild Thornberries, Freakazoid, which was a favorite of mine, not on, I think that was
oh my
on
God, WB, I loved but, Freakazoid.
Yeah. Yeah, he's on that for like
not
7
very
or 8
many
episodes,
people
so.
Even know what that is. Mm-hmm. I feel like that was like, I thought that was a I don't have cable situation, because nobody else knew what I was talking about because I didn't have cable and that's what we could watch on Saturdays. Oh, what a good show!
But yeah, it's cool that he got his start there, and he has such a special voice, just very different from a lot of other folks. So it makes sense that he lends it to animation so frequently.
Yeah, he has a really distinctive voice for sure. And it's a fun accent, you know? Yeah. And it just, and he has a great accent. So it's really cool. But then I was trying to remember, he was on SNL back in the day. But I also saw him on some TV show he was on for a long time. And I keep wanting to say Suddenly Susan, but I don't think
that's
it.
Was he on the Drew Carey show? Wasn't he the boss on the Drew Carey show?
The Drew Carey show. Okay. That's what I'm, Nope, you're not wrong. That's totally what it is. Cause I was like, it's adjacent to that. Yeah. I couldn't think of the one it is. Yeah. So that's what it is. Anyway. So everybody's seen him somewhere at some point is the point.
Yeah.
Also America Ferrera, who we've obviously talked about somewhat recently on Barbie, but she did Barbie Ugly Betty, Real Women Have Curves, a bunch of stuff. Jonah Hill. I don't feel like he has a ton of lines in this, but every time he talks, you know, it's him. You're like, oh, it's Jonah Hill.
Speaking
of
distinctive voices. Yeah,
exactly. And, he's, you know, of a lot of things. He was in Get Him to the Greek, right?
Yes. He was in that vague ish spinoff of Forgetting Sarah Marshall, which he had a smaller part in, but then they took him and Russell Brand and made Get Him to the Greek.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And then he did Wolf of Wall Street, of course, which he's famous for. He's done several other things, and notably his text messages have been on display recently as well. So anyway, good times. T.J. Miller, who's one of the twins. T.J. Miller and Kristen Wiig. Lots of comedy stuff between the two of them. Yeah. I'm sure you've seen both of them in all kinds of things. And then Christopher Mintz-Plasse, same thing. You know, he was in, what is his big thing? Is it Superbad?
I never want, because I feel so bad for the guy that probably everyone who sees him in real life is just like, McLovin. And I have to imagine that's got to be grating on his nerves. So I will defer to Kick-Ass 1 and 2, where he's in both of those. I loved him in those. Yeah, he's been in a bunch. He was in Role Models. He was great in Role Models, which I mentioned last week, too, with Sean William Scott. So another kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like lowbrow comedy, but quite funny.
Yeah. Yeah. And he did. And then our last one that I just want to mention, just even though it's very, very brief, but I love this actor, is David Tennant.
Same.
Who is of Doctor Who fame and Harry Potter fame.
Jessica
and
Jones.
Bunch of BBC stuff. Jessica Jones. Yeah, all kinds of stuff. He's great. He's got such range. It's awesome.
And I wanted to reference this earlier. I wasn't sure the right time to say this, but this movie is based lightly on a book called How to Train Your Dragon. Apparently, everyone, I've not read it, but apparently the similarities are few and far between. Like, yes, they're training dragons, but apparently the tone, the plot is vastly different. But fun fact, David Tennant is actually the person who narrates those books for the audio version. So it was cool that they brought him in for this as well.
Yeah, he does both. And it is loosely based on the book, but I will say the changes that they made to it, they cleared with the author. So she feels like it captures the ethos of the book. Especially the changes to, like, Toothless, for example, was like a very different dragon in the book and stuff like that. But she cleared all of those changes that they made. So at least there's that.
Yeah.
Also composer, we haven't shouted out a composer in a while, but this movie has a great score, I think, especially while the dragons are flying, as you know, just these really beautiful moments that are done so well with music. And so John Powell is the composer for this, and he did Ants and Prince of Egypt, which is also an incredible one. Shrek, great. Ants, I think, is underrated, which is why I put it there. I think in general, it's an underrated
you
film.
You like Ants or A Bug's Life more?
I think I like Ants more. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Like, those were the
you're
two
in the
that
minority
were
there.
Yeah, yeah. But I also think, like, they looked so similar. They literally came out in the same year. If y'all don't already know this about Ants and Bug's Life, they came out in the same year, and they're wildly similar, even in animation style. But I think that the marketing was, like, really around A Bug's Life was stronger. And so people went to see that one more. And I totally get it. Bug's Life is very good. I'm not saying that. But I think Ants is actually a better film overall.
I'd have to do one of those comparison episodes one of these months.
I was going to say, we'll have to do that later. I think that would be fun. Anyway. And then real quick, we're going to give you a plot summary. A hapless young Viking, Hiccup Horrendous Haddock III. I need y'all to understand that that's his full
name.
Triple H, who aspires to hunt dragons, becomes the unlikely friend of a young dragon himself and learns there may be more to the creatures than he assumed. Which I think is a cute and accurate summary.
Yeah.
Pretty well covers it.
Yeah. I think for animation, you said before about the composer and stuff, and this movie just, it does so many things so well. I think that's why it's so highly rated, because animation, obviously different styles of film, but it relies so heavily on not just how well animated it is, but also things like the score, I think, factor more heavily for some reason. And the voice acting is totally different. And the visuals, you mentioned the flying scenes, and those I think are some of the coolest scenes in here. It's worth mentioning, I remember seeing this in theaters, and it was one of the first 3D films I had seen. And it was apparently the first release Technicolor 3D. I can't speak to the entire, like, what the importance or, like, how that stands the test of time with all the different versions of 3D we have now. But I remember seeing this in theater and just being thrilled during those flying scenes. And even I'm watching it, you know, on regular television here, still just, like, it's so well put together, which speaks to, I think, why it's so well reviewed and beloved.
And those flying scenes were modeled after actual flight patterns that, you know, planes will take. And that's why it feels very accurate. It feels really interesting. And they actually have several shots that they speak to of, like, where the navigation point is on the plane and what the viewpoint would be. And they get those kinds of shots on the Dragon in a couple of spots, which is pretty cool. So
yeah, it's weird how reminded me of watching Top Gun Maverick last year.
100%. Very similar. I was literally about to say that. Yeah. I was literally about to say that. It's some of the exact same type of moves, you know? It's really cool to watch. And you, especially during, I think, and we'll get into this in a minute, but I think when he first takes Astrid up, that's a really fun flying scene. Yeah, for sure. And to your point, really quick, before we move past some of the basics, you know, it knocked its budget out of the park. Obviously, it's very well reviewed and well-liked, so it kind of jives. But it had a $165 million budget, which for an animated film, it's just, like, always crazy to me to hear those numbers, yeah. But, you know, really cool. But it made globally $1.6 billion with a B. So it did fine. It definitely made its money back. And I always wonder with animated movies sometimes, I'm like, why did they go on to make 12 more, like, depending on the series? But this one, I'm like, okay. I mean, money, they made money, bank. They were
all your questions can be answered by that, Mackenzie. Money.
By money. But, you know, see, Lilo and Stitch was incredible, the first one. But then they remade. They did, like, a second and a third and a bunch of others. But the animation gets worse every time. You know what I mean? Like, the quality of the animation gets worse. And they don't do that with all of them, but that was one of them. And, like, all those, like, Little Mermaids and Beauty and the Beasts and all of those, they did the same thing. The animation gets worse and worse. But this series, not so much. If you've seen some of the later ones, I haven't seen them all, but I've seen one or two of the later ones in the series. It holds up. Like, the animation is still really good and really strong. Yeah, so that's cool.
Totally agree. I remember being a kid and you would see some of those direct-to-DVD or direct-to-VHS back then sequels. And you're just like, why does this character sound different than they used to? Even as a kid, you knew something was off. Yeah.
And or their, like, coloring is slightly different, which I think is just such a weird thing to get wrong, but, like, they do. And anyway, animation is interesting. But I wonder, obviously, that's very true of, like, those kind of classic animation styles. But this is, you know, computer animation. So I assume maybe that's why it's not that different. But I don't know. I can't speak to animation styles very well, to be honest. So who knows? Who knows how much work goes into one versus the other? But all really impressive stuff. Yeah. So really cool, really quick. I don't think we're going to do any spoiler free. Like, we feel like you guys have seen this, right? Do we?
We can give a rating at the top. If there's for some reason people listening that have not seen this, and then we can jump right into spoilers.
Weirdos. If you want. Sure. Okay. So let's do that really quick. I would say, like, an 8 out of 10 for me. I love this movie.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
Yeah. I'd go
see it. Love it.
Yeah, I would go like 8, 8.5, like I said before, basing it on what it's trying to do. I don't think it's perfect, but it's really damn good. So yeah, I'd go like 8.5.
Yeah, and when you read about, like, the thought process behind some of it, I think that rating even goes higher. So maybe at the end, by the time we talk it all through, I would, yeah, be 8.5-ish. Because just thinking through the way they were so thoughtful with some of the choices they made for this film, is it's really impressive. And I think animation can sometimes be underrated in that way, as far as how well directed and constructed it is and well planned it is. And I do mean that more about, like, American animation, for example. A lot of times they're just kind of written off as kid movies, you know?
Yes.
But some of them, like this one, are just really well done from a plot perspective, from, you know, from a performance perspective, all of it. So
yeah, I think the last 2 decades or so, we've been in this state where it just feels like animation films are getting heavier and heavier emotionally. Like everyone's trying to outdo each other of how much can we pull at your heartstrings during this, and how much not adult content, but how many mature sort of lessons and themes can we fit into this animated film? So it appeals not just to kids. And I think this being 2010, we'll get into the actual plot in a second, but I think there's a couple really heavy things that I'm like, for its time, this was breaking a couple boundaries. We'll get to that.
Yeah, I agree. I think they've evolved generally as a genre, definitely a more intense adult type of genre, even when it's quote unquote children's content. Definitely. So, all right, cool. Well, we're going to dig into the plot now and all the fun stuff. So as we like to say, turn around, don't drown. It's spoiler time.
Oh, boy.
So I want to set us up. One thing I hear a lot about this movie, and when I've talked to people, and I just want to nip it in the bud right now. So there's a lot of comments about how this is a Viking community, a Viking settlement, Viking history, etc., and that they have Scottish accents, with the exception, of course, of Hiccup, who has
The kids have American accents, and all the adults have Scottish accents. It's strange.
It is a strange combo, but historically accurate nevertheless, because Vikings did settle. So the location of Burke is actually in an archipelago off of Scotland. So it's in this area of the Inner Hebrides, which is, you know, a bunch of little bitty islands. And that was actually a Viking settlement outside of Scotland. So they would have settled there regionally and, you know, potentially adopted that accent over some time. So there is a disparity, of course, to your point, between the kiddos and the adults. But there is some historical accuracy to how the settlement would have occurred. And maybe they have Scottish accents.
Yeah. And take this with a grain of salt, because this is just IMDb fun facts that I'm pulling out. So, you know, maybe it's not true. Some folks speculate that it's intentional for the adults to have their traditional accents and for the kids to sound more Americanized, to demonstrate sort of the difference in perceptions of the adults being set in their ways and the kids being open to the new experiences. They're the first ones that are open to this befriending dragons and whatnot before the adults come around. So again, I can't speak to whether that's actually accurate or not, but
I don't know if that was intentional, but it checks out, you know, it makes sense. Yeah. I mean, they really are the ones who are going to be breaking the mold as we go through the story. And they're at first not necessarily on that pathway, and Hiccup helps them get there. So it is kind of interesting to think about it that way, that it would be that intentional. If so, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
I think it's thoughtful. Yeah. It's important. See all these little nuggets in animation, even in animation. Another thing that I think is really cute is all the alliterations at the beginning of the film that they say. They say a bunch of great alliterations as they're describing the pests, you know, flying all around the island and all of that. And I love his little intro. And to your point, even speaking of the accents, like it feels so not necessarily childlike, but young, like a young kid is obviously narrating this. So it's interesting to lead off a story with a child or a teenage narrator, you know, like that doesn't happen often. And you kind of notice it stands out, you know, what his voice and his style is right away. And you're like, this is going to be interesting. And I sort of forgot about that. I was like, this is a fun little intro, like the way it's shot and the way you come in onto the island. Very cool.
Yeah. I think this one thing I wrote down was the story, the pacing of it just throws you right in. And I like that it's an hour and 38 minutes long. That's with the credits. And you get this immediate intro scene that tells you everything you need to know pretty much in the first 5 minutes of how this is going to go. And it also demonstrates how good the animation is in this film, because that nighttime with all the dragons flying around and fire going everywhere, I think that throws you in of just, oh shit, this looks really good.
Yeah, I think it looks beautiful. And again, the way they lead you into it, you're right. Like they just take you right in. The pacing is really strong. You can get introduced to all, you know, pretty much all the key characters very quickly. One of my first notes is like Astrid. What a terrible name for a crush. Like I gotta say, I mean, she's a badass as we see and learn throughout, but
what do you have against Astrid?
Not a great
Who
name.
Who hurt you, Mackenzie? Which Astrid said something mean to you in middle school?
I never met an Astrid in real life, I will say, but I have named a plant Astrid, but she was like an old lady plant.
You know? I think it doesn't help that I also associate Astrid with The Office, when that's Jan's baby's name, and they accidentally misspell it as Asturd. So anytime there's another character named Asturd, my head thinks Asturd. And so sorry, Asturd and How to Train Your Dragon.
Way to mess with How to Train Your Dragon. Way to mess with her beautiful name. Obviously,
America Ferrera will be fine. Trust me, she's doing
it. She'll be fine. She also doesn't sound like an Astrid. Like, again, speaking to their voices, you just, like, she opens her mouth and you're like, what? But she's a great character. And I love their, you know, as they're first getting into the dragon classes, into the dragon slaying classes, you know, she's in theory gonna be the best at this. She's the one, she's the top of her class, so to speak. And then you see, obviously, he starts to win as well, but in very different ways. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into that in just a second. But I just think that's so interesting how they start off as rivals and you don't feel like she's gonna be somebody who gets on his side, so to speak, you know, like that they're going to just be, you know, enemies throughout, and they end up obviously getting very close.
Yeah.
Very
close. Like the dynamic between the two of them a lot. And I actually all the kid characters. I think that entire motley crew of misfits that they have there, each one is fleshed out with their own personalities. And I love the interactions between the twins. I think TJ Miller and Kristen Wiig play off each other really well. And there's some of their dialogue mm-hmm. to each other are some of the funniest parts of the film to me. So I love that entire crew.
Well, and I also, I'm sure you saw, or if you haven't seen, they recorded a lot of this together so yes. that they could improv together and feed off of each other's energy, which is, if you didn't already know, not super typical of animated films. A lot of people record their pieces separately, and then sometimes they go back and do edits for certain things, but overall it's like they pretty much record separately. So it was interesting that a lot of these scenes they did all kind of record together to get that group energy and that improv energy coming off of each other. And I agree, I think TJ Miller and Kristen Wiig are very much doing that and have that throughout.
Yeah, I think we talked about this. We never published the episode, but we did a practice episode on Mutant Mayhem, the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles film. And in that same thing, people are like, oh, this is the most fun Turtles movie. They're playing off each other so well. And it was the same thing of like, they all went into the booth together and laid down their lines, and it gave that environment of everything just being fresh and fun and dynamic.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, like you said, there's kind of the new kids, the new world of Burke, and then there's like the older folks. But Craig Ferguson, of course, is like the bridge between those two. And he's funny because he does seem to kind of like try to mediate that familial relationship between Hiccup's dad, who is obviously the chief, and Gerard Butler's character, he's the chief and he has really high expectations. He's obviously like super manly, tough Viking, like the biggest dude in the village. And he just wants his teeny tiny, like petite son to become the same as him and start slaying dragons. And you get the impression, of course, right away that Hiccup's like not a super tough kid to begin with. His voice doesn't sound tough. Sorry, Jay. Like,
and also that's on his dad. Don't name your kid Hiccup if you want him to grow up. You are setting a tone there, like a self-fulfilling prophecy. So that's on you, Gerard.
I also feel like his name is actually Horrendous Haddock and Hiccup's a nickname, but they don't really flesh that out.
Okay.
I think Hiccup is like, you a hiccup. We didn't mean for you to turn out
like
this way.
I like your bully voice. You a hiccup.
It's like... But I just mean like he's like kind of, you know, they didn't mean for him to turn out this way. He was named Horrendous Haddock. Like, you would think he would be tougher, and did not happen.
So maybe, you know? Maybe I misheard that due to just IMDb just having him listed as Hiccup. But I just want to point out, Stoic is not winning a single Father of the Year award on rewatch. I'm just like, dude, this guy sucks. He is like, this poor kid, all he wants to do at the beginning is kill a dragon. That's his dream because that's what his dad wants him to do. And they everyone's already bullying him and making fun of him. And he seems like a black sheep in this village. And then his dad even is just criticizing the hell out of him and telling him how weak he is and how disappointed he is, just openly. So yeah. I don't know.
Is this a father-son thing? Like, is this a thing that fathers and sons have, or they just like have this natural, like, I don't know, competition or like headbutting? I know it's a mom-daughter thing. That's why I ask. Like, I don't know. I don't have a brother, so I don't know how this works.
I think with brothers, yes. My brother and I were super competitive despite being, you know, 6 years apart. But my dad never was like, oh, you're not good. You're not good at the things I'm good at. Or, you know, they push you toward what your actual skill set is. That's what a good parent does. So we have to get.
So you had a good dad as well.
I had a great dad. But we don't need to push everybody else into childhood trauma. I would not want Stoic as my dad. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Yeah, Gerard Butler is not a peak dad is what we're hearing. And he sounds super tough and he is super tough though. Like, so they are just so different that it kind of makes sense that they, of course, will clash, even if he's being overly critical, just that they would clash like from a personality standpoint.
Maybe there's a fan fiction that exists where it turns out that Hiccup's not actually Stoic's son, like his wife cheated on him. And that's why he resents him, because he's a memory of a failed marriage. Now, I want to say one other thing. Watching Stoic throughout this whole film make blunder after blunder and be an asshole, and even when, you know, Hiccup is calming Toothless down to not attack his father, he's still being a dick about it, puts him in chains, is talking shit to him. And I don't think we've ever done this before, but I want to give a spoiler warning. I assume if you've seen the first How to Train Your Dragon, you've also seen the second. If you have not, and you don't want something ruined for you, just hit skip by about 60 seconds. I promise this will be really quick. But, so, spoiler alert for How to Train Your Dragon 2. Stoic had it coming. He had it coming.
Yeah.
Talking shit to dragons this whole movie. Treating your son like shit. It's on you.
I know. And he just, like, my thing with him, too, is that he just doesn't fucking listen. He's so annoying in that way as a character. I mean, I think he plays the role very well and it's an important role for the plot, but like as a person, he's very irritating because like you said, he bullies his own son. Don't love that. He also just doesn't fucking listen, not just to Hiccup though, which is, you know, of course a little bit common. Parents don't always listen to their kids, but more so that he doesn't listen to like anybody. He doesn't listen to Craig Ferguson. His character is like trying to again mediate that relationship and share Hiccup's perspective, or that his progress is better than he thinks, or those kinds of things. And he just, Stoic just doesn't believe him. You know, he's just like, whatever, my son's a piece of shit, basically. And he's kind of given up on him at the beginning of this film. And he only like lights up and starts to really love him or be engaged in him later when he thinks he's the star student for killing dragons. And that's why he loves him.
And even then, he's talking shit of like, who would have thunk that my dumbass piece of shit son could have turned it around while I was like, he's still being a dick.
It's still all asterisks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. With like, hey, I didn't think you could do it, but okay. You know? Yeah. But then they have that really awkward scene where Hiccup obviously he's actually, again, spoiler alert, not good at killing dragons. He's good at reading. He's a dragon behaviorist.
A dragon whisperer,
if you will. A dragon whisperer, exactly. And he's figuring all of this out because of how he's interacted with Toothless on the side. Mm-hmm. And so he's really good at evading conflict and bringing it down. And his dad just doesn't get that, even though he sees some things happen. They just don't seem – nobody seems to be putting that together. That's my one – I think maybe complaint throughout, which we can dig into in a second, but they have where he comes to the workshop and him and Hiccup are talking and they're like, he's like geeking out. He like wants to talk dragon killing with his son. And I'm like, what a weird thing to bond over, to be like, now I finally like my kid because he like wants to talk about killing dragons. And it's so, that whole scene is so awkward. And they have this like very bro-y, like, yeah, it's okay. We're going to go to bed. Good night. You know, like, tap each other on the shoulder, like punch.
I think the guys who have that, like, who relate to that scene are probably the same guys that have pictures of like dead deer in their dating profiles. Like, look at what I did. This is for you, Dad.
Oh my God.
Like, trying to impress women with that, just throwing that in. I apologize. I'm going off the cuff here. Sorry, guys.
I was going to say, I don't know that those are our listeners, so we're probably okay, but I know exactly what you're talking about. And I think that's, yeah, they're bonding over hunting. And it's like, that's not Hiccup's energy at this point. And so it's very awkward. And it's that like toxic masculinity moment, I feel like, a little bit for a hot second. But going back really quick to what I was just saying is like, while they're training, I don't understand why nobody is putting together that he is de-escalating. Like, yes, he is quote unquote controlling the dragon a little bit. And like, that's a good thing, but he's like calming them. He's literally scratching them and getting them to lay
and
down.
And no one's picking up on the fact that they're like on their backs like cats enjoying belly rubs. Like, yeah.
Exactly. And so I'm just like, why does everyone think that this translates to dragon murder? You know, like this is not, these do not immediately correlate. It's very weird.
And his reward for like domesticating all these dragons is that now you get to kill a dragon. Isn't that great?
And
it's
I
like,
know.
Don't you get, yeah. But it makes me wonder, and I haven't seen all the How to Train Dragon sequels, but I wonder if a goal of domesticating these dragons is to eventually have really cute mixed breed dragons like down the line, you know, like. Yeah, sure. What's like a dog mixed?
I would
like
totally
a golden doodle and like, you know, let's do that with dragons.
Oh yeah, I mean, like my baby Rolo was a shepherd Roddy mix, and that is the most adorable puppy you've maybe ever seen. Yeah. So yeah, that is an excellent plan. If that's Hiccup's plan, totally crossbreed these adorable dragons. Toothless with anything has got to be adorable. Let's be honest.
Can we talk about, because that's one of the things I wrote down was just Toothless equals adorable. And I just, 100%. His design, when he first, I don't know if it's the first or second interaction with him in the woods, when he does the puppy dog eyes and gets his eyes really big when he's kind of surprised and trying to figure things out. And then him trying to mimic Hiccup's smile and he's trying to like contort his mouth. Just such cute animation. Yeah.
Oh my God, he's so cute. Literally in my notes, as soon as he appears, I'm like, oh my God, he's so handsome, is what I wrote in my notes. And he's just adorable. He's beautiful, like beautiful color, sleek. Again, his head is like oversized. His eyes are oversized and he's got that stitchish-ish face and he's super cute. And the way he's like, he's annoyed at Hiccup from the very beginning, but he's curious.
Right.
And that's what's kind of fun about him, because he's been billed as the Night Fury up to this point, and he's like the most lethal, most unknown, misunderstood dragon. And everyone's terrified of him as a result, right? And in this case, he's kind of curious and he's not that scary yet. Right. Like, you don't know that he won't be, but because he's injured, right? But he at least is not. He could still try to just pulse fire at him, and he doesn't try to do that. Mm-hmm. He's intrigued by Hiccup, and that's because Hiccup has freed him. And that's the integral moment for them to consider each other a little bit closer. And I think it kicks the whole thing off, and it's not what you expect Hiccup to do, but you want him to do. You're cheering it on the whole time, right?
Yeah. That
set him free.
That goes along with what I said earlier about sort of the pacing of this story. I like that they throw you right in at the beginning. I like that we get to dragon training in the first like 15 or 20 minutes of the film where we're there. We get to this relationship between the two. And I just love the way their dynamics slowly changes. And what you said about he is annoyed with Hiccup. And even the first time that Hiccup repairs, he tries to throw him off. He's like, oh, I'm fixed. Yeah. Like, fuck right off.
Yeah.
And then he realizes he needs Hiccup to sort of help him fly. So then that creates this codependency, which I think plays out. And eventually they become friends. Spoilers.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny you say that in their first flight when he knocks him over. Mm-hmm. My note is literally, you deserved that, jerk. Because he threatened him. He almost killed him. He thought about it. Mm-hmm. And I know he didn't do it. But like, if I'm Toothless, I'm also quite trepidatious around you.
Yeah.
I don't exactly want you on my back day one, you know. So them working through that is really great. And I agree with you. Like, they build this really symbiotic relationship because, you know, Hiccup designs this wing, as we know, and they practice together. But that whole scene, like, of him trying to get out of that little glen or whatever it is, hurts my heart every single time. Like, it is so hard to watch. He just wants to get free. He's hurt. And if Hiccup hadn't showed up, he probably would have starved.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And so it's just so sad to watch that scene. And I love that it forces them again to bond and consider each other and then eventually become real partners. Yeah. You know, they were very loyal right away. And we see that later where he saves him. They save each other on a recurring basis. But I also like when America Ferreira, or Astrid rather, you know, she's the only one reading the room. Mm-hmm. Like, this is weird.
So what are you up
everyone
to?
Else is yeah everyone else is just like, oh, this is so cool, he's gotten so good at this, makes sense, he's Stoic Son, you know, everyone's just like kind of writing it off. But Astrid's the only one who's like, okay, excuse you, this is 0 to 100. Also, I'm a bad bitch, and all of a sudden he's better at this.
Does she say that in the movie out loud? Is it in the script?
Verbatim.
Okay, I didn't know. It was a deleted scene.
No, it's verbatim. You guys just maybe missed it, you know. But yeah, so she's just like, listen, I know that something fishy is happening here because this doesn't just shift gears this quickly and blah, blah, blah. So she follows him and she she meets Toothless, and I love that interaction like between the three of them, and Toothless is so suspicious of her and like basically like acting like a, you know, child running around like throwing a little tantrum and trying to fuck with her, and he's trying to mediate the tooth. That's just such a cute scene. I think and it's so adorable.
Apparently he understands English too, because when she finally apologizes and says sorry to Hiccup, that's when he looks and goes, okay, fine, now you can just ride me like normal. But up until that point, he's taking her for a thrill ride and trying to scare the shit out of her basically.
Oh, yeah. That's like, to your point about the flying earlier, it's the funnest scene. He's doing the wildest moves. He's going all over. She's freaked the fuck out. And I love that Hiccup is trying to calm him down. He's like, he's never like this, I swear, you know? And he actually improvised a bunch of those lines where he was like, what did he say? Like, thank you, you useless. Thank you for reptile. Nothing, you useless reptile or something. And I just, every time that cracks me up, but he improv'd that. That's and it's cool. During that whole flight scene of like, he's not listening. He's like, listen, she's going to have to earn her spot on this dragon.
Fashion hazing. But I just love the visuals of that entire sequence. And as I said, watching it in theaters in 3D, if they ever re-release this in theaters and you've never seen it in 3D, highly recommend, or if you have one of those fancy television sets, but that scene, just, I think I got to take my time with it a little more here. And when they finally settle down and they're flying into the sunset, and then there's this really beautiful shot where they sort of do a flip, like a slow motion flip on Toothless, and you see the sky rotating behind them, and then they fly up into the clouds shot. And it's nighttime. That whole sequence is just gorgeous.
It's a gorgeous sequence. And that's the, I can't remember the name of the piece in the score, but I think it's Romantic Flight or Romantic.
That sounds
it's romantic.
I think that's right, yeah.
Romantic, something like that in the score. Yeah. And it's the music to that whole sequence. And it's, again, it's gorgeous and it goes with all of those shots beautifully. And yeah, it's one of the coolest scenes. I mean, and all the flying scenes are really cool. And to your point, very Top Gun Maverick-y. I wonder if Top Gun Maverick was inspired by this. Let's be honest.
Ask Tom Cruise probably, next time we see him.
For sure. Obviously we're homies with him. but yeah, I love that scene so much. And then of course we get to, you know, they bond as a result of that experience as well. And I love that I kind of love that she flips gears so quickly. Yeah. And you wouldn't necessarily think that for somebody who has been as indoctrinated as she has to this understanding of dragons her whole life, and which is not her fault, not anybody's fault. Like, they all thought they were a threat. I get it. They're maybe not. They're really dog dragons. Let's be honest. They're adorable. And I love that she just switches mindsets. She's like, okay, I'm on your team. Like, nobody wants to fight these dragons. Nobody wants to battle them or hate them. That's the mental shift of, well, the only reason we've done this is because we thought we had to. And now that we don't have to, this seems like a much better plan. Like, I love that.
What did you think? Because this is one thing where I still don't know. I'm kind of on the fence of how I feel about this. But for it all to be, I kind of like the explanation, but part of me, if it feels like a cop-out of, actually, it turns out there's just one big evil dragon, and all the other dragons that have been pillaging your village and stealing all your stuff is just to feed him. So as long as you just kill that guy, then we're cool. What did you think about that?
I thought it made a lot of sense from like a queen bee standpoint, because it is a her actually. So they really position her as a queen bee type, where, you know, everyone is going to like, kind of like in an ant colony, right? Like, they all come to serve the queen and they bring her food and she, you know, whatever. So you get the sense that it's very similar as a dynamic of like, they are, as they get closer, literally brainwashed by her, and like they can, she's controlling them, which is somewhat true of like a beehive, for example. Like, she can connect with her hive and control them and force them to do certain things. And that's what you see in the dragon colony. So it kind of checks out from a colony perspective. You're like, okay, I mean, biologically feels like it could make sense. Her size though is wild. Like, how huge she is. It's crazy.
There's also crazy the cannibalism that happens when she eats one dragons.
I have that in my notes too. I was like, she just ate her own dragon. What a dick. Like, I was so upset.
I was looking in the IMDb note and it said like body count, 3 dead dragons by the end.
Three
of
dragons.
This. But so one gets eaten. Obviously she dies when they blow her up. But what's the third one? I don't remember a third one.
I think she steps on one.
Oh, okay.
When she's on the beach, you know, and she's like crawling out, I think she steps on one.
That's sad.
I could be wrong, but I feel like that's what it was. But yeah, I don't think
she was a very good queen. I'm just going to come right out and say it. I don't think she was an honorable queen.
not our favorite. Maybe she's very she's a Marie Antoinette of dragons, you know, deep cut. Throwing back, guys.
She's just sitting there eating pastries and
she's getting fed and spoiled constantly. I mean, I see a lot of parallels. I'm just saying.
And then the French.
Anyway, yeah, shitty. And then the French. Yeah, she's not our favorite. She's a real shitty queen. I can totes agree with you on that. And it makes me so upset that she's going after her own dragons. And then when they get back, like, that Toothless is immediately so misunderstood by Stoic, not anybody else. Like, but the loyalty that is happening there is, like, I just think almost understated in this film. Or maybe I think we just need to shout out from the rooftops. But, you know, he's being potentially attacked in this arena, and he doesn't want to kill this dragon because obviously everything that he knows about the dragons, and he wants to calm it and is very close. And of course, yeah. Stoic loses his mind and ruins it and whatever. So it turns into a battle. And Toothless is so protective and connected to Hiccup at this point, beyond just awareness, like hearing something, he can just feel that something is wrong. And he breaks out of there, which, as we've seen, is very hard for him to do without Hiccup. And luckily, of course, this new wing helps, but it's like controlled by Hiccup normally. Yeah. So it is just such a feat for him to get out of there to come save him. And he does just so fervently defend him. And it's beautiful. And it makes me so mad, the whole scene, that like people don't understand that is what's happening. And again, with the not listening and all of that.
And he's got Stoic pinned down, dead to rights. And he chooses not to kill him because he's commanded. I think Hiccup says, no, don't, or stop, or whatever. And he listens to him, only to be pelted and taken down and imprisoned.
And then they take him captive. Yeah. And I'm like, why? How are you so stupid to not realize that he literally just stopped him? You also saw him less than 10 minutes ago appease this other dragon, and you're just mad that he's not killing him. So you're not connecting dots that you should be connecting, that he is nonviolent with them, but also has influence over them. And you're choosing, to just take him captive and use him.
Yeah, but to be fair, though, the Vikings in this are basically just total idiots. It's basically an example of Darwinism, of why do you still live here if you know that there are dragons and you're fighting? And it's like, we're stubborn, we're Vikings. I get that. They're having a cage match where they're expecting Hiccup to kill this giant dragon inside of this cage. They're all standing next to the cage. Meanwhile, the dragon can still shoot fire. So there's fire being shot out through the cage walls because there's huge gaps.
I know.
It's like, what are you people doing? This is just Darwinism at its finest.
The whole thing is stupid. The whole arena is stupid, to begin with. And the fact that they're like keeping dragons captive and also training people to fight dragons in this format to begin with is like, this is a controlled environment. This is not how this is going to occur in the quote unquote wild. Mm-hmm. Like, how is this really training them? So yeah, it's a very frustrating process to begin with. And they do come off as, somewhat of Neanderthals, to be honest. But I didn't like how Hiccup handled that situation. And like, I literally have in all caps, use your fucking words, Hiccup. Like, as they're taking him captive, he's like, no, don't. And you're like,
yeah,
do more, say more, don't stop there. And he just like shrinks. And that's where I'm like, it's not about how big you are. It's about standing up for what you believe in. And he's not fucking doing that in the way that I feel like Toothless just did for him. And that made me really upset. I'm like, he broke out to come save you. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, oh, no, don't. And that was very frustrating to me. I was like, Toothless is the best and you suck.
Vikings aren't known for their skills of communication, I guess. But
I guess that's what it is. But they break out. Obviously, the whole thing happens. They take him to try and find the nest and fight the big red dragon. And, you see him help them navigate over there. And obviously, they end up needing to be saved, which of course happens by the new younger group of, like you said, the new generation, the next generation, who are pro dragon, and they're like cool to be friends with the dragons and ride the dragons and use them as partners. And they come and take out this dragon through much intense battling. Obviously, it wasn't super easy. As we said, the dragon is ginormous.
That whole sequence is also very good. I love the way that they go through sort of invading the fortress. They have that cave shot with all the dragons sleeping inside. They scurry out. There's the funny moment where they're like, is that it? We won. Yay. And then the big one shows up, and that whole burning the ships. And by the way, how do they get back to I guess they ride dragons to get home.
They ride the dragons. Okay, fair. Yeah. But I do like that shot too, to your point. I like when they like hold up the torch to the mm-hmm. to the cave, and it shows the whole thing. Yep. And it's like that shot down there. That's so good. That's so cool. Yeah, it's very well shot, and that battle scene is well shot. And you see Toothless, like, just, I mean, obviously very powerful dragon in its own right, and more lithe than this other big dragon, but just not an even matchup by any means. Right. And, you know, comes out on top, but also is because of this thing that Hiccup noticed earlier with this little baby dragon of, like, not the line earlier of, not so fireproof on the inside, are you? Mm-hmm. And that's how they take out this giant dragon. You know, Toothless, which is a night fury, has one of the strongest pulses of a dragon's breath, basically burns her from the inside out and ends up being incredible, but she's like exploding on them and they're gonna fall, and he falls off. And I just love the shot, yeah. to your point, the shot of Toothless, like, just straight shot down, diving to catch into Hiccup fire, and yeah. like that pause of, like, you don't know if he got her, if he got him, but he does. And that's what changes it for Stoic, of, you saved my son, right? You know,
now he's bought in, thank God. But getting to what I talked about before on sort of the heavy stuff, we have the incredibly disappointed father, which I think is already pretty much a bummer. I do like the recurring line of, you just pointed to all of me, or you just gestured at all of me, gets said like three different times. That line does make you laugh the first couple. And then at the end you get the validation of, oh, now that it's a good thing. But you have that, yeah. that deep component. And the other one that I wanted to call out was him losing a limb at the end of this.
Yeah.
And I love how it mirrors Toothless, yeah. and now they, you know, they need each other even more now, and he's sort of like using him as a crutch, but that is pretty heavy. I don't know that we had seen yeah. a character lose a limb in an animated film before.
No, but I think it's, and they actually, I actually read about this, is that they were reticent to do that in the first place. They actually thought that might be too heavy for audiences, mm-hmm. but they did it with test audiences with parents. And like, are you cool with your kids seeing this? You know, is this too heavy? And they said they thought it contributed to the story and that it was good. And it showed how much was sacrificed to save both of them. Mm-hmm. And they said that they felt they should leave it in. So it was like parentally approved, literally.
Yeah.
But it is one of the heavier things that you, yeah, see in these animated films. But I think it's very poetic. I agree. I think it's very poetic, and it bonds them even further. And I love that Toothless is in the room, like, waiting for him to wake up, like restless puppy style. Like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, wake up, Dad, wake up, Dad.
And Janelle said when he does wake up and he starts running, she's like, oh, he's got the zoomies, pretty much.
He's got the zoomies, exactly. He's got the zoomies. He's like, Dad's up, Dad's up. And it's so cute, but he's there for the moment that Hiccup realizes he's lost his limb. And that's what I think is like a real bonding yeah. moment for them, because Toothless comes and he calms. Mm-hmm. He calms and he sits quietly and he's like, I know. But then he catches him. Like you said, he uses him as his crutch and he holds him up. And it's just really sweet. Like, I always get choked up in that scene. I'm like, they're just,
I think he's qualified to wear one of those like vests so that he can fly on airplanes.
He's a service animal.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. he can get on airplanes mm-hmm. if he wants. Southwest, Delta.
I mean, I think he is the airplane, to be fair. So I don't know.
I'm just saying, if they're going to Hawaii and he doesn't want to do all the work,
the whole thing himself, yeah. for sure. No, he's not. He's definitely a legitimate service animal at this point, for sure.
Speaking of animal related things, just another fun fact is that because of this film and its popularity, the year after it came out, black cat adoptions skyrocketed at adoption centers around the country. And obviously the number one name, most popular, was Toothless, thanks to this film.
Which is so appropriate. But my follow-up question to that is, why weren't more black dogs not adopted, is my question. Because he's very dog-like in a lot of ways as well. And black dogs are the least adopted, if you didn't know this, the least adopted at shelters. And I don't understand why. They're beautiful. They're beautiful. I don't get it.
It might be appearance wise, maybe. Like, he acts more like a dog, but I would say his face, like his head structure, looks more like, so a black cat from the front, like head on, might look more like a Toothless than a dog would. That's just my theory.
I'm just a dog person is what I'm, that's my takeaway here in general, as like as a person. But also, again, I adopt black dogs, people. Go to your local rescue and adopt a black dog. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your service.
PSA for the day.
There's one other voice actor, if you will, that we left out of this who is a dog, because we said earlier, obviously the dragons don't have any dialogue, so they use a bunch of sound effects and all these different things. But a dog named Paco, who is a Chihuahua that had a YouTube channel in the mid-2000s, they were like, that's the voice. That's what we want this one dragon to sound like. So they took some of his audio and paid him handsomely $100 for his voice to be used.
For context, guys, he's the Red Death Dragon, the big, mean queen bee. That's him. The little fucking Chihuahua is that the tracks, big that dragon. I know. But see, that's a great point, though. Toothless is a combo of a bunch of sounds, which I think is why he sounds so unique. He's like elephant, seals, other like cats, dogs. They said even like horses at one point. He's a combo of a bunch of overlaid animal sounds, which is, I think, what makes him sound so unique and exotic. And I think that's so cool.
We love you, Toothless.
We do love you. And literally my last note is Toothless in all caps, of course. Toothless would be my dragon. And I put like a bunch of heart faces.
It's all so, come full circle. Cold open to the close. Yeah.
You know. All right. Well, if you guys couldn't tell, we love this movie. We think it's very, very cute. Yes. Would we revisit our ratings? I think eight and a half is the consensus.
8.5. Yeah. We did point out a couple of not inconsistencies, but things we don't love about it. Just some of the ignorance of the Vikings and their behavior. It's like when you watch a horror movie and the character who's being traumatized is trying to convince the cops and these other people to listen to them. And it's just frustrating in that way to watch, but that is a necessary plot device to get us through here. But I don't think I would change my rating too much. 8.5's pretty high.
Yeah, no, I think it's legit. And we're, again, as you guys heard, in alignment with a lot of other people who also love this movie. Mm-hmm. So if for whatever reason you are still here and you haven't seen it yet, definitely go give it a watch. But also, if you have seen it, go watch it again. Mm-hmm. It's a fun rewatch. Yep. I really enjoyed it. So thanks so much for joining us. We do want you to come back next week for the continuation of anime, as we said. And this is, I think, another widely considered another classic, which is The Emperor's New Groove.
Do you know offhand how much older Emperor's New Groove is than what we just watched? Was this 10 years
before it's that? 2000, so it's 10 years prior. So I mean, it's a different style, like even in just 10 years, very different style. So it'll be fun to talk through. But anyway, for now, go have a drink and watch a thing. Cheers.
Pink, pink.